Us today, as you know, we are announcing second-year academic progress rates for all Division I institutions. Joining us here today is Dr. Miles Brand, president of the NCAA, Dr. Walter Harrison, president of the University of Hartford and chair of the NCAA Committee on Academic Performance. I'd like to turn now to Dr. Brand and Dr. Harrison for opening comments, and then we'll take questions. Dr. Brand.
Thank you, Eric. The bottom line is this. We are encouraged, indeed highly encouraged, by the latest round of APR data, but there's more work to be done. Our goal is not to sanction teams and schools, but rather to change behavior. And we are starting to see some positive changes in behavior towards academic achievement of student athletes. In particular, 99 sports teams at 65 Division I colleges and universities who lose scholarships because of poor academic performance and lack of retention of their student athletes during the 2004-05 academic year. Of those 99 sports teams, 9 are women, 90 are men's teams. Data from the 2003-04 academic year indicated that as many 350 sports teams could have faced scholarship losses under the APR program. The squad size adjustment or margin of error was important in some of those schools not receiving sanctions at this time, but they are at risk. Indeed, 40% approximately of baseball, men's basketball, and football teams, 728 teams all told, are at risk for losing scholarships in future years, but are now protected by the margin of error. If they had these same scores in the future, 2 years from now, or some cases even 1 year from now, they would lose scholarships. Our process is to phase in the sanctions and to enable teams and schools to make the appropriate adjustments. So we are on track, but there's still a lot of work to be done. We see the APR as an early warning system for schools to make the changes. Otherwise, because of the upcoming historical penalties, which will be more serious, they will be affected by those. When a contemporaneous penalty is applied, an institution may not re-award the scholarship of an ineligible student-athlete who left the school to another student-athlete, and this restriction is for 1 year. For a team to lose a scholarship under the contemporaneous penalties, a student-athlete must have failed academically, flunked out, if you like. Student-athlete must have left the institution, and the team's APR must be below 925 out of 1,000. That is to say, if a team, taking into consideration the squad size adjustment, is below 925, that puts them at risk. They lose a scholarship after that if a student-athlete goes what we call 0 for 2, is neither retained nor eligible. An APR of 925 translates to approximately a 60% graduation rate using the graduate success rate, the far more accurate rate than the federal rate. Along with your materials, you should have also received not just a list of schools that are sanctioned, but also a top 10 list of those sports teams and institutions then that are doing well. And we've looked at, for each sport, the top 10% points, and we're going to provide awards and recognition for those. So we also want to encourage and reinforce success as well as change behaviors at the lower end. The message for academic reform is clear. Recruit student athletes who are capable of doing college-level work. Help them meet the standards for progress towards a degree. Help them remain enrolled so they have an opportunity for a high-quality education at their college and university. Walt?
This is Walter Harrison. I want to make comments in three capacities. I want to say, first of all, that as a member of the NCAA, I'm extremely proud of what the NCAA is doing to take a leadership role in improving the academic performance of student athletes. I'm especially proud of Miles' leadership on this issue, and I want to congratulate him for taking a tough but fair stand. I also want to thank my committee as the chairman of that committee for their hard work in this effort. And I especially want to thank the staff for a lot of very hard work. There are thousands of teams who have all had to be calculated and dealt with fairly and honestly, and there's an enormous amount of detail behind all these figures, and there are a lot of NCAA staff who work very hard to be fair and just. I also want to say, as the chairman of the committee, that I'm very pleased that the policies that we have put in place are beginning to have an effect. I agree with Miles that what we see here are the beginnings of behavioral change because of these policies, and that's very gratifying to me, and I'm sure it is to my entire committee, and I'm sure it is to the board of directors as well. We are, as Miles said, these are warnings, but they are tough warnings, and people who have received penalties ought to have a clear message that they need to change their policies and their procedures and the way their teams are being supported by their institution. On the other hand, I think that because of the squad size adjustment or the margin of error, we've been fair in allowing institutions to make these adjustments in real time and to do it in a way that's reasonable and rational. And then finally, as the president of a NCAA institution, I'd want to say that I think that there's a lot of data in the reports that each of us are sent. I hope my colleague presidents will spend some time looking at those reports. Obviously, if you've received penalties in this round, the message is clear. You need to see what the problems are with those teams. But it's equally important to take a look at teams that whose multi-year APR is below 925, but who have benefited from the small squad adjustment. As Miles pointed out, those institutions need to get better quick because in future years, those adjustments get smaller and then go away. And I say, looking at my own institution, for example, that I've got a couple teams that I'm going to be asking questions about. So I hope that I hope my colleagues among the presidents and chancellors around the country will do the same thing. I think this program is doing exactly what it is meant to do. It's meant to encourage institutions to recruit and support student athletes so that they can graduate and succeed in life and not only on the playing field.
Thank you, Miles and Walt. We'll now turn to our audience today for questions, and Stacy, our operator, will explain how you can ask a question today. Stacy?
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you do have a question. And we'll pause for just one moment. And we'll go to our first question from Doug Lederman, Inside Higher Education.
So go ahead.
Dr. Brand and Dr. Harrison, thanks for taking the time. There's a lot of information here for us to absorb, so pardon me if I ask a couple of questions. You both, I think, made the statement that you've seen progress, and I guess I just want to make sure that I understand the comparisons that you're making between last year's numbers of number of sports that were seemed susceptible to penalties and the ones that actually took penalties this year. And when you talk about there being progress, which factors? It seems like there are a couple of factors that mitigate against that were added in from last year to this year, the squad size, and then also this comparison to the general student body. I wish you could. I'm hoping you can talk a little bit more about how that was applied and what impact that had on bringing down the number of sports susceptible to penalties this year as opposed to last year.
Sure.
Is my question clear? I'm sorry if it wasn't.
That was. Doug, this is Kevin Lennon. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good, Kevin. Thanks.
Good. Thanks for that question as well. You know, I think when we frame the issue of progress and what encourages us, first of all, clearly academic reform has taken hold on the campus in terms of the understanding of all campus administrators and student athletes of its importance. So in very broad terms, we know and we feel that on a regular basis that people understand what this is about. You also think in terms of progress as it relates to fairness And as you'll recall, the conversations that we have had with the membership through the course of the year and with the Committee on Academic Performance, that certain adjustments needed to be made to the original APR program to address the issue of fairness that you heard President Brand and President Harrison talking about. And so the numbers do reflect new policies that enforce the fairness component. In particular, the issue of institutional mission is one that was factored into both the waiver and the adjustment process, looking at institutions who serve a different population and making appropriate adjustments when we have athletic programs who, in fact, are exceeding the regular student body in terms of academic performance. So we can note that, and we can see that, in fact, as a measure of progress. Also, when you take a look at some of the lower-performing teams from the first year, while it doesn't apply across the board, many of those low-performing teams, we have seen some improvement from one score from the first year to the next. And so I think we note that as an area of development. And that has been, I think, one of the critical parts of this entire program is taking the previously low-performing teams, encouraging them to improve. So I note progress in terms of move towards fairness and improve towards mission being considered. And then finally, just in terms of the lowest performing teams getting better.
Do I have a quick follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Two quick things. So is there a figure for the number of teams that were excluded from penalties because of the general student body comparison? Is there a figure comparable to? I mean, you show figures for sort of how many fewer teams were penalized because of the squad size adjustment. Is there something comparable?
This is Kevin again.
Yep.
There were 63 teams that were given relief from the contemporaneous penalties based on institutional mission.
Okay.
That's the comparison.
And those would be able to find just by going through the individual. Those would be noted in the individual institutions' reports. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and then I guess just lastly, sort of summing up my earlier question, is there an actual reduction besides the sort of teams that were exempted for these various reasons? Do you think were there actually fewer teams from last year to this year that were susceptible to penalties, except for the fact that they were given these exemptions? Because that would be another sign, obviously, of progress if there were an actual reduction.
Well, keep in mind that last year, though, we weren't, because there weren't any penalties, you didn't have to apply any of the adjustments and the waivers that were developed through the course of the year to address the issue of fairness.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back and made those adjustments to the first year data based on the policies that the Board of Directors has adopted. I think your comparison, Doug, will be much more relevant next year,
mm-hmm.
as we actually then can
right.
see where we are in terms of data from this two-year aggregate to
right.
next year's.
I see the point. Okay, thanks.
Okay, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Wendell Barnhouse, Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Hey, Wendell, go ahead.
Thanks. Obviously, in the Big 12, there are quite a few teams, baseball-wise, with some penalties, and it looks like baseball maybe as far as the, you know, Division I, 1A type schools got hit maybe the hardest. Are there any particular reasons why you all think that baseball is having some problems academically?
Yeah, I think the baseball – this is Miles.
Yes.
The baseball community is aware of these issues and, in fact, is working hard and forcefully to try and change it. One of the problems is that baseball, more than football or even basketball, sends student-athletes off to the professional leagues in their what would have been their senior year.
Right.
And so the baseball players really need to both finish their academic requirements of that year to remain eligible, but also have to meet our standards of 20, 40, 60, 80 percentage of their degree programs.
Right.
There's also a great deal more transfer in baseball than there is in other sports.
Right.
Because, as you know, baseball does not have, you don't have to sit out a year
right.
if you move between Division I institutions. And I think that also may have some consequences for the eligibility issues.
if I could follow up, just I'm curious as far as the historical penalties, and at what point in time would those kick in, and when there might be any, you know, postseason penalties against the team for, you know, continued academic problems. Any time frame on that?
That's a question about, your question is when do the historical penalties begin to...
Yeah, I mean, at what point, is it a year, 2 years? In other words, when would something like that start to take effect, and when, you know, if a team or a school is not measuring up as far as the APR, is it 1 year or 2 year when there might be like a sanction for a postseason, I guess, is the question.
You asked two questions. You asked when does it begin, and when is year three of the historical penalties. But
okay.
Yeah, next year, actually, warning letters would go out to institutions based on 3 years of APR data that they would be subject to historical penalties. And I would note that President Harrison's committee and the board will be making those decisions in the very near future exactly where those cut lines are.
Okay.
The following year after the warning, the actual penalties would be implemented, and there you begin with scholarship reductions, recruiting restrictions, and playing season adjustments that would follow in the next phase. It is after that particular phase, then you begin to contemplate postseason restrictions. And I think the first year the first year that would be possible would be, I think it's 08, 09.
Okay. And one other question, just on the looking at the chart or the printout on the team subject to contemporaneous penalties, as far as when we say if somebody's losing a number of scholarships, is it the total headcount penalty? Is that what we would look at as far as saying that this certain school is losing a certain number of scholarships, or am I not reading that correctly?
Yeah, this is Kevin. That will obviously depend on whether it's a headcount or an equivalency sport.
Okay.
The board approved a cap of 10%, no more than 10%.
Right.
That could be implemented. So with a headcount, using basketball as an example, that would be no more than 2.
Right.
You have other equivalency sports such as Division I AA football as an example.
Right.
The cap of 10% would be 6.3%.
Okay.
To emphasize one final point. We are intentionally phasing in both these sanctions and the more harsh historical penalties in order to allow time for the schools to adjust their academic programs. Our goal is, again, to change the behaviors, and we want to make this realistic so that we're doing it in a time frame when they can actually make those changes.
Right. And the question most people will have is, you know, that's the kind of penalty that would really tend to get people's attention if you don't make the postseason. So that's the kind of time frame I was looking for, and you all answered my question. Thank you.
You bet. Next question, please.
We'll move to Mark Alessia in Indianapolis Star.
Go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. How many waivers were denied?
We had a total of about 90-some waivers. You had many that related to mission, and I believe we had 63 of those that were actually granted as it related to institutional mission. We had 30 other waivers that were filed, and of that group, there's a series of iterations, if you will, some fully approved, Mark, some partially approved, some conditionally approved based on academic recovery plans that were aggressive that said the school's going to move forward, and then some that were denied flat out. Of the denied of that 30 group, we had 16 that were denied flat out.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
We'll go to Ted Lewis, New Orleans Times.
Yes, Kevin, I noticed that Tulane was one of the schools that did not submit their information. Are Tulane and University of New Orleans being exempted in any way from this year because of the hurricane?
No, this is Kevin. No, they're not. We're engaged with Tulane in particular and several other institutions to make sure that we have all the accurate information and data before we release anything to the press. That's one reason why there will, in fact, be a second release that will involve Tulane. But they've both indicated their ability to provide this data, and we're doing all we can to help them with that submission.
The other part, though, between Tulane, University of New Orleans, any other school might have been affected by the hurricanes. Are in the future, when you're looking at this year's data, will there be any consideration given for that?
Yeah, I think the goal of CAP, and certainly President Harrison can speak to this as well, and the board is to be as fair and accommodate institutions who find themselves in difficult situations. In this instance, the institution said that they were able to provide the data, and again, we're doing all we can to help them with that submission.
But I'd agree. I think we would like we'd be as sensitive as we could under a waiver process to something that was involved with a natural disaster.
Good. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Jack Carey, USA Today.
Jack, go ahead.
Dr. Brand, is the association concerned that there seems to be quite a large number of historically black schools that are being sanctioned here? I think there's six in the MEAC and three in the SWAC. Is that an issue you folks have to look at a little harder or work with these schools more?
Yes, it is an issue. A number of those institutions received mission exemptions. We need to take into account the student body and a number of other financial issues affecting the schools. So, yes, we are concerned. But there were a number of institutions that, even under those conditions, were not performing as well for the student-athletes as they were for the rest of the student body.
Thank you. Next question, please.
That will come from Scott Cooper, Sacramento Bee.
Scott, go ahead.
First question is, how is it handled on the situation if a team does not give out scholarships? There's a few situations out there, either teams moving into D1 or in certain schools that they just give financial grants and aids and academic scholarships but not sports awards.
Well, this is Kevin. Keep in mind that the cohort of individuals are those who are on athletic scholarship. We do have some exceptions for those that simply do not offer any athletic scholarships, such as the Ivy League, and believe the status there would be kind of active recruited status. One important point to note, though, is that the financial penalties that would accrue to an institution that underperforms or a team that underperforms is based on the maximum financial aid total. So, in fact, if a school does not offer the full allotment of an athletic scholarship, they may actually not feel that penalty, if you will, because they're not offering the maximum number. However, as the historical penalties continue to be rolled out, it's safe to say that will actually catch up with those institutions. So it provides temporary relief if you're not a fully funded program, but down the road, the historical penalties will begin to address that type of underperforming program.
Because of things like the postseason restrictions, you mean?
Yeah, and actually maybe even at the first level, and again, President Harrison can certainly speak to this, those decisions have yet to be made, but historical penalties, again, are designed for those who have been habitually underperforming, and there may be a sense that those financial aid restrictions at the first level of penalty may not, in fact, be anchored on simply how many scholarships you offer, but may simply be anchored more on just your lack of academic performance for 4 years.
And as a quick follow-up, can you explain the difference a little bit between the historical and contemporaneous?
Sure, this is Walt. I mean, I'll give you the theory of it. The contemporaneous penalties are the loss of scholarships capped at 10% of the allowable scholarships. They're meant to be warnings to institutions and to teams that you're headed on the wrong course. You need to turn yourself around. Historical penalties, which begin to take effect next year, are based on more years' data and are more severe because they're meant to capture the worst of the worst. They're meant to look at teams that have underperformed year after year after year, and they become quite severe as they go on. So the penalties we're announcing today, which we call contemporaneous penalties or warning penalties, the historical penalties, will be much more severe.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Brian Bennett, Courier Journal, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, you mentioned that the teams that qualified under the squad side adjustment are still kind of at risk. And I wonder, is there a certain number or level where teams should really be worried? I see some teams that maybe have like a 920 and then some teams that are like 905. Is there any way to calculate that? Or
I think the short answer is that any team that is below 925 or even hovering near 925 is at risk.
Okay. And will there be a squad side adjustment again next year since there will only be 3 years of data at that point?
That's correct, and there will be a squad size adjustment the following year. But remember, each year it is less. It disappears in the fourth year. And so that it actually becomes more difficult to catch up as time goes on because the number of years of data is larger.
Okay, thanks.
We'll go next to Karen Mitchell, Columbia, Missourian.
Good morning, everyone. I was wondering if the NCAA has had any feedback from university officials or from parents regarding the goals of the program. Are they supportive of it? Are they, or has anyone said, hey, my kid's there to get into the pros and we're not focusing on his academics? What kind of feedback have you been getting?
Well, I'll give you anecdotal feedback. I don't think we have any scientific survey research at this point. I do a lot of public speaking on this, and I have to say, uniformly, the general public very much appreciates it. One of the more common critical comments is, what took you so long? Why haven't you put this program in place years ago? So I think it's been very well received, and at least, again, the general public I've addressed both understands and appreciates it.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
There are no further questions in the queue at this time, but I do want to remind everybody it is star one if you do have a question. We'll go to Jody Upton, USA Today.
Hi, I had a question on how the APR of 925 is predictive of a graduation success rate of 60%, I think is what you said today. And previously that was reported as it was predictive of a success rate of 50%.
Yeah, the difference there is that the earlier prediction was based upon the federally mandated rate, which does not include transfers in and out of the program. And that could, on average, take one-third of the students out of the calculation. The graduate success rate does count in transfers in and transfers out of the program, therefore including all students, and hence is more accurate. It's on the basis of that more accurate information, looking at all the student athletes, it equates to approximately a 60% graduate success rate.
And you don't expect that to change with another year's worth of data or anything that should be set?
It might change, but very modestly, depending upon what the data set looks like. I think the data set is large enough that the changes will be minimal.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
We'll go to Eddie Tamanis of USA Today.
Yes, Kevin, I think probably you'll be the one to answer this. So I'm a little confused here on this 10% cap with respect to some sports. For example, you mentioned 1AA football specifically with a equivalence of 63, which should be a 6.3 cap, but we're seeing some nines here among some 1AA programs as far as the headcount would go for actual scholarship losses. What's the measuring stick there that we should be looking for?
Thanks for the opportunity to clarify that, Eddie. That column that you have over there relates to the headcount of nine. And that actually is something that applies to both 1A and both 1AA. The fact that they have a limitation of the 63 grant nades is where the 6.3 comes into place. So you're right. You saw the 9 down there in the headcount, but you saw the actual penalty there being the 6.3.
So what kind of penalties then would be applied in terms of actual numbers of athletes? What do these institutions have to do now, I guess?
I appreciate that again. There would be the penalty of the 9 on the overall headcount and a penalty of the 6.3 in terms of the grant and aids, and then the 3 in terms of the initial, so it applies across all the columns.
So the 3 applying to the incoming class, then?
Yes.
Gotcha, okay.
And the 1A is the 9 overall, and you saw then with the 3 initial.
Kevin, anything else to add on that point?
Okay. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Go to Tim Griffin, San Antonio Express News.
A couple questions for you guys. First of all, several of the major men's basketball coaches have said that they won't change their recruiting philosophies to steer away from the very, very top athletes who might end up with a good opportunity to turn pro in less than a 4 or 5 year graduation period. Does that concern you that coaches are that adamant about wanting to do that? And then I've got another question after you answer that.
If a student athlete remains academically eligible, and then after a year or two or three, goes to a professional league, they're not an 0-for-2 and therefore not subject to the penalty. We've taken that into account. However, if a coach recruits a student who is not capable of doing the academic work of the institution and they flunk out, whether they go to the pros or not, there's a penalty to be paid. And while it may only be scholarships right now, and although that's a serious penalty, when we start in the future withholding the ability to participate in postseason play, I think you can't ignore it.
Okay, and then one other question as well. These same coaches are talking about how difficult it is for just an average person to understand this. One coach that I talked to mentioned that he needed to take an academic course in interpreting the APR. Does that concern you that when you start talking about equivalent caps and things like that, that this isn't going to be readily broken down by the average person and then also the people that have to worry about getting their players eligible?
You know, that's an interesting question. For every complex problem, there is a simple solution that's wrong. I mean, these same coaches always talk about fairness, and they're right to talk about fairness. When you talk about fairness, you have to take into the complexities of the situation, and you have to make sure that all the details are accounted for. So if we didn't do that, certainly we'd be criticized for trying to paint everyone with the same brush and be unfair. The fact of the matter is you can always criticize this program if you're not comfortable with stressing the academic effects of a college education. And so we are really working hard to make sure that everyone, every coach and every student athlete, every athletic director knows that if you're going to play in our games, you're going to be a real student.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just add something to that? I realize that, as in all rating and ranking systems, there are complexities, but the message, as Miles said, should be pretty clear. Recruit students who are capable of doing the academic work at your institution, and then provide them with enough support so that they can succeed. That doesn't strike me as very difficult. Pretty simple. And so what this APR rate actually measures is how well you're doing those two things. If you're doing them well, you're going to score well. If you're not, you're going to be getting penalties.
Thank you. Next question, please.
We'll go to Mike Myers, the Davis Enterprise.
Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I just have a couple of questions about how these penalties will be phased in. Is it going to be so these scholarship reductions that are in this list, are those going to show up next year, the 2006-07 year? I mean, how does that work in terms of when these scholarships are taken away?
This is Kevin. Some of those scholarships, those contemporaneous penalties, will be felt in this academic year, the 05-06. For those institutions who are subject to the penalties, who are not able to take the penalty this year, they will take that penalty next year. Really is the first available opportunity, and at the earliest point you can. So some are taking it this year. Those who can't take it this year will take it next year.
And for a school that has a headcount penalty of 9, that means that they can have 9 fewer people on aid. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question, please.
We'll go to Brad Wolverton, Chronicle of Higher Education.
Is there a way to calculate, without going into some of the details about headcount penalties and equivalency penalties in the other language you use here, to just say how many total scholarships are being revoked at these colleges?
You know, it's Kevin, that's looking at some of our data friends as well, and that's a little bit of a tough total for us to get at this point in time. We can tell you how many penalties teams are subject to in terms of the loss of scholarships, but the issue that I referenced earlier about how close they are to the maximum financial aid total and whether or not they're under that or will really feel the penalty, Brad, it complicates that exact number. So I would just encourage, for your purposes, to note how many teams are penalized at this rate of scholarships. I think that's about the closest that we can do at this point in time.
And one other question. You mentioned, Kevin, that some of the penalties will be felt this academic year. Can you give some clarity to that? Just explain how that would, how a team could, you know, be penalized and put that in place right away.
Some actually, you know, this is the public release where we're providing all of the data for all the institutions. Many institutions knew much earlier in this academic year whether they were going to be subject to a penalty or not. Some actually then were able to plan as it related to this year and their offering of financial aid, or just where their current squad size happened to be this year. If they were able to take the penalty this year because they were in a position to do so with their squad size, they were required to do so. Others, obviously, based on their academic calendar, may not have known whether they were subject to a penalty, went through all the waiver process, et cetera, and then very recently learned that they have a penalty. Well, their squads may be full right now. They have student-athletes in all of those slots. Those institutions would then take those penalties the following academic year.
Thanks.
Next question, please.
We'll go to a follow-up from Ted Lewis, New Orleans Times.
Yes, I wanted to clarify, on a 1AA football team that you have listed as losing 6.3, losing 6.3 on the total equivalency and three initial counters. Does that mean they can assign no more than 22 people next year, and that they can only have like what, be 59 on scholarship then?
I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Julie Cromer, to clarify this for you.
Okay.
Rather than 22, it actually would be an initial counter class potentially of 27, because in 1AA football, the initial counter maximum is 30 versus the 1A football maximum, which is 25. So you're separating by initial counters, which would be 27 possible, by overall counters, which would be 9 subtracted from the 85 number we have in 1AA football. And then at the same time, the total value of scholarship dollars that is awarded by that team must include a penalty of 6.3 subtracted from the overall value possible of 63.
I understand. Thank you.
Next question, please.
We'll go to Pete Thamel of New York Times.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. thanks, Eric. Guys, I'm looking at the names of the schools, if you will, and the penalties in the sports. And it just seems to me when I think about, you know, if you want to just go BCS conferences to throw like a generic, you know, that people can relate to, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of those schools on there. I mean, does that, you know, big name schools in the sports that, you know, people watch on TV and that generate money, have those schools done a good job adjusting since the last thing you've done, or are there waivers? I mean, it just seems like there's sort of a lack of that Joe on the street can relate to of teams that are really, you know, being impacted, and perhaps they've adjusted.
Pete, this is Miles. There has been adjustment, and that's the good news, that a number of teams, particularly those high-profile or paying good attention, have made a number of adjustments. That's part of it. In some cases, there's waivers, and let me give you a specific example. You might recall that we are encouraging schools to bring back old players and have them graduate, and you get an extra point, a bonus point. And so some of those schools have taken advantage of the fact that there are some players that they could bring back who will now get a degree. And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have a number of former athletes now who have degrees, and we count that as a success.
Okay. Is there a time limit on that? Or?
No, but you will run out of players at some point.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
We have a follow-up from Wendell Barnhouse, Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Right. It's kind of along the lines of what Ted Lewis was asking. For instance, in the contemporaneous penalties, I'm looking at, like, Oklahoma State in baseball. The total equivalency penalty is 1.17, and Joe, that's 1.17 of a scholarship, basically, or the cost of a scholarship that they're penalized. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then as far as the NA and the total initial counter penalty, why is there an NA there, or what does that mean?
There's no initial counter rule in the sport of baseball.
Okay. That's why that's not there. And if I could, if was the squad size adjustment decision, how much did that affect baseball? And would, if you all hadn't done that, would baseball have taken an even harder hit, do you think?
The answer is yes, they would have taken a harder hit. And I think what that means is that a number of the baseball teams are at risk.
Now, everybody at the NCAA knows that I know least about data of anyone in the room, but I think it's true that the smaller the sport, the smaller the number of athletes on a team, the larger the adjustment is. So a sport like football is going to have the smallest adjustment, and a sport like golf, which has whatever small number of scholarships are, is going to have the largest adjustment.
Thank you.
Well, this is Eric. I might add that we have background information related to the maximum limits on scholarships and how to understand the penalties on our academic reform web resource page.
Yes, I've seen all that. That's an excellent resource. I just haven't had a chance to read it all, and I wanted to make sure I'd understand it by getting it explained in English, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. Next question, please.
Follow-up from Doug Lederman, Inside Higher Education.
I just want to clarify one thing in your news release. The eight institutions that it says have not completed the process, can we assume that those are all institutions that sought waivers and they just haven't been or are appealing in some way? I just want to clarify why they're what that means.
This is Kevin. They're just not all through the process yet, but you're right. The majority of those, and we talk about process, are still processing adjustment and waiver requests.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
We'll go to Omar Kelly, South Florida Sun Sentinel.
I just had a question in terms of Florida A&M's situation. With a school which has already put on penalties in terms of NCAA sanctions, how does that impact their scores and their penalties that they presently have?
This is Kevin, I think, Wall can certainly speak to this as well. I think the Committee on Academic Performance and the board were pretty clear that this would simply go as an additional penalty on top of their penalty already for the infraction. These are two separate things. This is an academic contemporaneous penalty, and it would simply be added on to what they currently have.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't been involved in the individual situations, but this is meant to measure academic performance, not other things for which you would get penalties for infractions.
So on top of the scholarship limitations that they have to put themselves in under for violating NCAA policies, they also have this reduction of 8 or 6.3 scholarships. I'm not fully understanding. You know, there's one here where I'm just looking at football, value of overall financial aid penalty 8. But then total countable aid awarded is 6.3. What is the difference between those two numbers?
The difference between the two numbers is that one reflects a number of student athletes versus the amount of scholarship dollars awarded. It's very complicated in one AA football because they have limits in all three areas. They count the number of players on the sideline who are receiving aid, as well as calculating the overall amount of aid they're receiving. Not all of those players are receiving full grants and aid. Some of them might be receiving half a grant and aid, for example, or the equivalent of half, and they would be reflected as a 0.5 in the equivalency column rather than a 1 in the headcount column.
Okay, so for instance, total countable. So in specifically asking about Florida A&M, because this is, I guess, the best basis I can find, they will lose in scholarships the equivalent of 6.3 scholarship athletes in football.
The equivalent of 6.3 scholarships. Equivalent of 8 overall student athletes.
Or 8 overall student athletes.
Actually, it's both.
Actually both?
Yes.
So they lose eight student athletes for football and 6.3 scholarships.
Yes, but keep in mind, every time you award a student athlete a dollar of aid, that student athlete shows up in both columns. You would be, in essence, there's possibility that across those 8 students they lost, 6.3 total scholarships would have been awarded. So it's the same set.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
I think this is trying to make sense. This is probably the most complicated thing I've read in years.
It is very complicated.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
We'll go to Joel Chow, WBNS-TV.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, how does a former athlete come back help in the adjustment, and how far back can these players be?
Well, you get a bonus point for each student-athlete who comes back and graduates. And that can go back forever. So if you can find a nice 83-year-old person who wants to come back and finish their degree, I suppose you can. I mean, the truth is, to be quite honest, it's going to be people who graduate or who should have graduated a few years ago and have come back and finish. And as Miles said, we want to encourage that behavior. But I personally know of at least one famous student-athlete who came back about 25 years after he should have graduated and completed his degree. So I think, it's open to anybody. It's more likely going to be people who should have graduated a few years ago. But for each person who comes back and graduates, you get an extra point.
We'll go to the next question.
We have a follow-up from Omar Kelly, South Florida Sun Sentinel.
Just addressing that in terms of athletes coming back. Now, they aren't allowed to be on scholarship, right? It's just basically they have to pay their own way, or are they on scholarship?
Well, the school could give them a scholarship, but they can't get an athletic grant and aid.
Okay.
School might give them an academic scholarship or some other scholarship, and that's up to the institution, but they're not on athletic aid, so that's the key point.
Okay.
Go to our next question.
And there are no further questions at this time.
We thank you for joining us today. A reminder that on our website, ncaa.org, is a academic reform web resource page with a lot of helpful information regarding academic reform and APR. Thank you for joining us today.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.